I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. Before the popularity of ebooks, Wikipedia, Siri, Google, and smartphones, we went to the library to check out a book or do research or thumb through the back issues of our favorite magazine. Since information is literally at our fingertips, libraries are under pressure to reinvent themselves to stay relevant. John Palfrey writes in his new book, Bibliotech, that the original design of libraries no longer suffices. He argues that libraries can still fill an important role in the community and are crucial to a democratic society, but they have to change. The subtitle of his book is Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. He's the headmaster of Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts, also president of the board of directors of the Digital Public Library of America. And John Palfrey, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
Also with us is Siobhan Reardon, and she's the president and director of the Free Library of Philadelphia, a job she has had since 2008. And this year she was named the Library Journal's Librarian of the Year. And Siobhan Reardon joins us here in our Philadelphia studio. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well. You're very welcome. Let me begin with you, John, if I could. You write in the beginning of the book that this original design of libraries no longer suffices. What's the major challenge that libraries face?
Well, I look forward to Siobhan's view on it because she knows all this much better than I do. But
oh, don't be modest. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
It's going to have a mutual fan thing
here. I will referee that. No, go ahead, John.
I think the big challenge really for libraries going forward is the fact that they do such important things as they always have for hundreds of years in terms of bringing physical objects in the form of books and programming and so forth to communities, and we still need that. We need that in the middle of Philadelphia just as we need it in the middle of Boston and, in every town. But also there are so many things that people are looking to libraries to do going forward, particularly in terms of the digital world, but not exclusively that. And so the challenge is that the funding and support for libraries has not gone up, but the expectations and the possibilities have, and libraries have to figure out how both to do the things that have been so traditionally important and also do all these new things with really about the same resources, if not fewer.
Well, Siobhan and I were talking about the fact that, as we all know, we live in this information age, the kind of fire hose of information that seems to come at us from just about all directions. And John, libraries are in the business of information, are they not? So this seems like a wonderful time to be in the library business.
Absolutely. And frankly, it is a wonderful time to be in the library business. And the people who are really grabbing that future and making things possible, and certainly Philadelphia is one of the great stories in that trajectory, really are having a wonderful time, I think, in it. Partly at the same time, though, there are some threats to libraries, which are that because people can get access to so much information, for instance, on their smartphone, looking up things, so things like ready reference that sometimes will solve an argument you might be having in a restaurant or whatever, people think, maybe libraries aren't as important as they once were, but forgetting how important libraries are for so many different things that surround that activity. So I think you're right. On the one hand, it's a fabulous time to be in libraries. On the other hand, I think we've sort of forgotten how important they are.
To you, Siobhan, what do you see as the challenge here in Philadelphia? And there are many things going on. There's a school crisis going on. There's a poverty rate in the city that I think also affects what libraries can do in the city. But how do you see your job?
I, like John, believe that, and you too, actually, believe that this is a carpe diem moment for libraries. And if we don't seize it, then we're going to be missing this space and place that we actually own uniquely. So when you think of Philadelphia, we've had to go through a bit of a transition. We did have a massive budget cut, and so we had to rethink about how it is we were going to continue to run this library system in an effective way, knowing that we had all of this digital input to deal with, but also dealing with the fact that we are a city that 500,000 people actually are functionally illiterate. Only 39% of the children are reading on grade level. So where's the library space and place in that? So our physical assets in the city are critically important because we still maintain that center of community, that safe space where people can continuously learn.
These are libraries just all over the city.
Exactly. There are 55 locations throughout the city and a couple of hotspots. But what we decided as an organization, saying we have to really play that space of that part of the education continuum to really work in a way so that when the children are out of school, when we the out of school time, how do we power up where the library's relationship with families and children and community actually develop? And so it's less, as you and I were talking a minute ago, it's less about the transaction and more about the transformational relationship. And it's really all about that human being that's in the space and how it is we're going to get them to the next space.
Well, clearly libraries can't do everything. And it's interesting, as I understand it, in Philadelphia, the library has decided to focus on a couple of areas.
That's
one
right.
is job seekers, entrepreneurs, immigrants, newcomers to the region or to the city, children under five,
right.
and people with disabilities,
That's
deciding
right.
that these are the people we're going to serve.
So these were people that we recognized needed the most out of their public library. Adult users of the library know how to use the library. They know how to ask the question. They know how we work. But when you think about the new American, the people with disabilities, the children, these are people that need a lot more of our attention and need a lot more of the services, the limited funding that we have to provide excellent services. Mm-hmm. And so this is where the city needed our greatest input. And it's not that we're not serving everybody else, but we're power downing in these areas.
John, do you think libraries have to do that, especially libraries in big cities have to do that, which have to decide these are the people that we're going to focus largely our attention and efforts on?
Absolutely. I mean, when I read that Siobhan and her team had done that in Philadelphia, I thought it was really smart, and particularly, of course, the five that she chose. I understand it's politically sensitive, no doubt, that somebody mm-hmm. says, oh, I'm not in one of those categories.
Right.
But I think it's crucial. And, you know, I think about a family that's growing up with affluence and someone who's, you know, where there are high degrees of literacy and they've got great connectivity to the home in terms of internet. They've got a lot of devices. They've got schools that are really supporting the kids and have great school libraries. You know, for many families like that, a library, may not be as crucial in terms of connecting to civic life. Now, I still think they are, but in terms of being able to download whatever they wanted from Amazon or Netflix or otherwise and get support from other parts of the community, that's one thing. There are lots of people who are just not in that circumstance. And I think ultimately, from a democratic perspective, it's crucial that libraries emphasize the communities that they really need to serve. And I think, Siobhan, this has really honed in on that very effectively.
Well, let me pick up on something you said, and I think we would all agree that, helping people who are on the other side of the digital divide is a very worthy mission for a library to have. But, John, I'm wondering about the person who has all that stuff and has a computer and has a laptop and has a smartphone and has the wherewithal to get their information anywhere. Why did they need a library?
Well, I think we all need public spaces where we come together around ideas. And actually, it's one of the things that I think the great big library in the middle of Philadelphia has done so well is to create spaces where people do come together in a civic space. It ties back to the history of our country being a place where people come together in communities to solve problems, whether you're thinking about a New England town hall kind of setting or you're thinking about Benjamin Franklin rallying citizens to make a case against the British or whatever it might have been back then. And I feel like that need, that desire to have a public space, not a commercial space, but a really public space where people come together is crucial. I also think even though the fact that one can afford books doesn't mean you might not want to go there, and there aren't wonderful librarians to help you. So I'm fortunate in our family that we can certainly buy books, but my daughter and my son love to go to the library and often go nearly daily to the library because they enjoy being with the librarians. They enjoy being with other people. They like seeing the other books that are arrayed there physically, and they like the kinds of programming that happens there. So it's not only about need. It actually might be about possibility for families in that category.
Well, Siobhan, picking up on that, thinking about the kind of librarians then we need or the kind of training that they have to have, mm-hmm. do we need to rethink that?
I'm going to say yes, but I just want to back up a second and say, to John's point, some of our actually busiest libraries happen to be in the most affluent neighborhoods. And so this public absolutely takes advantage of the resource, but they're actually coming in for that connectedness, that community engagement, that conversation, and the programming. I would say the free library is exemplary in the amount and quality of the programming that we provide in each and every location. So that makes the difference. But to get to your question about librarianship,
yes.
What's interesting in a public library? So there are four different types of librarians as you're finishing up library school. And so the public librarian coming into an urban public library setting, I think it's very challenging if you're not aware of the situation you're walking into. It's a tough environment, and UC is the toughest of the tough. It's disappointing for some folks because they want to work with the books, and you know that's not the work of a librarian. Librarian has to know the collection, but it's all about the relationship you're going to build with that community that's in that space. And so you have to be ready for the fact that we have a significant amount of homelessness in our libraries, that we have children that are coming from families that are impoverished. How many of the families where the parent is not literate, and so it makes life a bit challenging for the work that we do in trying to encourage people to read. But I think that that's half the joy if when you're in the space of a library, that moment when you've reached that individual, that all of a sudden the light went on and they're reading. The digital on-ramp that we presented for the thousands of computers that we have in our spaces, and how many homes don't, 40% of the homes in this city don't have internet access, and so they are coming to the library, and we are training them. We actually created a new position called a digital resource specialist that works specifically in training people to on-ramp to the digital world. Basic stuff, just how you start a resume or how you start a letter, how you begin to an email account, and so they're able to connect with their families overseas, particularly for the new Americans.
You know, it's interesting because I thought you were going to say, oh, we have to be all, you know, digitally literate and have all this sort of advanced information in computer science. You're saying that in many ways librarians need to be case managers or perhaps counselors.
Yeah, I do think that we have for a long time resisted our role in the social services environment because we wanted to be librarians. We wanted to work with the codex or the text material. And our world has changed so much that you can't ignore who's in the space and how they're in that library. And the fact that our world is actually fairly borderless and that we need to spend a tremendous amount of time leaving that building, going into community, creating the relations, going into the schools, going into community-based organizations to build that relationship which needs to be built. Because you do want people crossing the transom of a library who ordinarily never would have because they thought their literacy skills were too low. And so, it's exploding. So going back to the question of the librarian, I have been working with the library schools to say you really do need to add some social dimensions to the degree. You have to have social anthropology. You have to have some sort of psychology. You have to have some data analytics that talk about the city in which you wish to work and who's there and the kind of librarian you want to be. So John talks a lot about the need for the digital experience. Yes. And the digital culture that needs to be in libraries. And some of our younger librarians, they are absolutely there. The older librarians, they'll get there just because.
Just like the rest of us, right?
So.
Well, I'll tell you what, we do need to take a very short break. And John, I want to get back to you right after the break. And we are talking about libraries, the importance of libraries, the role that they play in the world of Wikipedia and Google and ebooks and smartphones. The voice you just heard is Siobhan Reardon. She's the president and director of the Free Library of Philadelphia. She was also named the Library Journal's Librarian of the Year this year. Joining us by telephone, John Palfrey, author of Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moskowenko, talking with Siobhan Reardon and John Palfrey about libraries. There are something like 120,000 libraries in this country, and they face some challenges in many ways, challenges because we all live in the information age. And again, we are taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Siobhan talked about the sort of personal, interactional part of being a librarian. To you, John, looking at, the digital needs and requirements of librarians, what do you think, what kinds of skills do you think they should have?
Well, I certainly think the list Siobhan started with is a great one. I think that increasingly it is necessary for librarians to help us to make our way through this digital environment. And I think this is one of the reasons why libraries are, in fact, more important, not less important, in a digital age than they were in the analog age. And think about one simple way to conceive of this issue, which is that there are many more sources of information than there were in the past. So just think, if you were looking something up, you might have thought to go to an encyclopedia. And even though Encyclopedia Britannica wasn't always right necessarily, or any other encyclopedia you went to, you certainly had a sense that it was the source. Today, if you look something up on Google or you go to Wikipedia, which many kids do as their first port of call for information, it may be a trickier matter to figure out whether that's a good source. And librarians actually can play an enormously important role in helping young people in that way. That's just one of a zillion examples where this greater information environment, this broader knowledge environment that we have, actually presents new opportunities and new challenges that librarians can help us to meet.
I was looking, in fact, I have it here in front of me, an article in the New York Times talking about libraries and what they're trying to do to literally get people in the door, having craft classes. There was some classes that involved 3D printing, teaching cooking, sewing, knitting. Is that, do you think, the job of a library, John?
Oh, absolutely. I think libraries can be community gathering places around knowledge and information in so many different ways. And I think I recall seeing Siobhan maybe dressing up to do a little bit of cooking at one of her
I think that's
libraries.
True.
Seems like a great way to bring people in. There are funny examples all across the country of people, you know, finding different ways to teach things, including how to carve up a pig or in the middle of the country, or places that check out therapy dogs to kids in high-stress areas and high-stress schools. I think really any kind of a skill anything that ties people to one another in a community can be really strong, and libraries can play that role. I don't think it's the only thing libraries should do, but I think it's a great way for libraries to connect to people in their communities.
And Siobhan, to get people in the door?
So, yes, and I think that one example that we created at the Free Library was our Culinary Literacy Center. We actually made up that name, where we built a demonstration kitchen on the top floor of our central library, the one on 19th and Vine. And the purpose of that center was to get at the fact that the literacy rates in this city are so challenging. And one of the excellent ways to get people to come to literacy happens to be cooking. And so cooking is nominal literacy skills. It's math. It's science. It's that collaborative learning. It's a beautiful space. And we also, in that same space, we have English as a second language classes. And so the people who are in learning English have to bring a recipe from their culture and teach in English what needs to be done. For younger students, we actually have students in the third grade and fourth grade through the eighth grade and then into high school, and then, of course, adults. But the idea was, its basis was functional literacy and developing better functional literacy skills. The other part of this, it turns out, is all of the issues around nutrition and obesity and health that the center has now taken on. And Liz Fitzgerald, who actually runs the center, is now putting together kits to take out to the neighborhood libraries and conduct these types of classes. But in this concept of library of things, it's getting back to, I could never afford a violin, and there are people who are willing to contribute their musical instruments that they no longer use. Or in one of our locations, our McPherson Square, we want to put together a library of cake pans and different cooking devices, because there are businesses that can use, you know, they want to make a wedding cake and that could be a business, and they're certainly borrowing the cake pans. And
so
the goal
sort of
is
signing out the way you might sign out a book.
Literally, you borrow it for 3 weeks, you know, and we'll fine you if you're late.
A little stamp on the back, right?
But yes, I think that libraries across the country are engaging that concept of literacy in many different ways, and it's also that community engagement saying, the book, while it's still very important to our world and we pay plenty of homage to that form, that we have to now incorporate many different types of devices and electronic into our world.
John, let me go back to you. Siobhan mentioned the word book, which is very important to our discussion since we're talking about libraries. And in your book, Bibliotech, you talk about some of the copyright challenges with things like e-books. Is there a short answer to that question about what libraries can do, and I guess what the copyright challenges of e-books are?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I should start by saying, lots of people still love physical books. I still love physical books, and in doing the research for this to write the book Bibliotech, one of the things I did was talk to lots of people and looked at lots of surveys about people using physical objects versus, as in books versus e-books. And what I found is continuously people prefer physical books for the three Bs, the bed, the bath, and the beach, and those kinds of tangible experiences. People still like to read physical books to their children and so forth. So there still is a place, certainly, for physical books. But there is certainly a growing number of people who are also interested in e-books. And actually, a lot of the growth that I've observed is not just in people who choose one or the other, but people who actually choose both. So people wanting to have physical books for some purposes and to use digital books in others. And one of the big challenges going forward is that the law is not as friendly to libraries when it comes to e-books as it is for physical books. And there's a particular provision in the law called the First Sale Doctrine, and that's the part of the copyright law that said if you buy a book, and this, if any individual, if you were to go down to your neighborhood independent bookstore and buy a book, you really can do anything you want with it. You can bring it to a secondhand bookstore, you can resell it, you could tear it up, you can, you know, do just about whatever you like. With an ebook, they're governed by contract. In other words, you have a contract with somebody providing it to you, and you don't actually have the right to resell it or to do different things. Some of those contracts say you can't even read that book aloud, for instance. And so libraries actually, when it weird provisions, novel. But the idea in a way is, I think, to lock down what you can do with certain e-books because publishers are a little bit fearful what will happen because of this e-book market. So coming back to libraries, if you think about the future for libraries, a future in which libraries actually don't own any collection, in other words, they're only licensing e-books, they don't actually own it, they're just renting it to be able to give it to somebody else, that actually is not a great future necessarily. The historically great approach that libraries have had to be able to buy books and to keep them in collections has actually been very helpful. So that's part of the struggle I think that libraries face right now is trying to be able to get e-books on terms that they like and can use and can give them out, but also for the long-term preservation of knowledge in our country.
Siobhan, you're nodding your head there.
I do think that the fact that libraries will no longer own a copy of a digitally born book is a very big deal. And when you think about the Library of Congress and the resources that when you think New York Public Library or the State Library of Pennsylvania, even our Central Library, and we always have at least the first copy or the last copy is actually what it is, and so that there is some sense of ownership and connection to that original work. And you think about the rare collections that we have in Philadelphia or New York Public Library, the archive. That is, those days are the fact that a rare book is not going to exist past a certain period of time. And how do we get at these digitally archived copies so that there is this maintenance of history for long into life? But I am very concerned about that there is the corporate, that it is none of these titles are actually owned by a singular library. It's really, for me, and I can't imagine it's for John, spent a lot of time in this world, it's a big deal.
A big deal. And we are talking about libraries, and that's the voice of Siobhan Reardon. She heads up the Free Library of Philadelphia, in fact, was named Librarian of the Year this year. Joining us by telephone, John Palfrey, and he's the author of a new book called Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. He's also founding chairman of the Digital Public Library of America, and he is the headmaster of the Andover School in Massachusetts. Let me go back to you. We got a lot of people that want to join the conversation, John, but you talk a lot about democracy in this book and the importance of libraries and democracy. Are you bothered at all that people might come to a library to play video games on the computers or to shop for their Christmas presents on the computers? I mean, does that feel like people are misusing a library? Is it possible to misuse a library?
Oh, I think I suspect it is possible to misuse a library for sure, but the things you just mentioned don't make that list for me. I'm delighted for people to be coming out to libraries for nearly any reason. I suspect that Siobhan has her list of things she'd prefer people didn't do at her library. But I actually think, I take an example. Some people don't want their kids reading comic books or graphic novels when they're young. I'm a big believer in letting kids read just about anything that gets them into it. And people talk about the importance of J.K. Rowling and what she's done in terms of kids and literacy. I think it doesn't have to be super highbrow and connected somehow to civic life and be really boring in order to be important. But I do think fundamentally that libraries are a crucial cornerstone in lots of communities to help our democracies work. And I actually think one of the things we should be proudest of, and this is true in Philadelphia, it's true in Boston, it's true in lots of places in the U.S., that libraries really grew up in these communities in a way that that has underscored the strength of our democracy. And one of the reasons I fear our not paying enough attention to and supporting libraries, frankly, with public funds, not just with private philanthropic funds, is how crucial they are to our democracy. I think about it often in terms of a job seeker or a new immigrant to the country or somebody who, for whom the library really is the lifeline to civic life. I think we need to provide that.
Let me get some callers in. Looks like we have, Jerry from Mickleton, New Jersey. Jerry, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, it's Mickleton, actually.
Mickleton. Sorry. That's there. Okay. Go ahead, Jerry.
We're over in Gloucester County, and I just wanted to tell you I am a retired librarian, and so I'm really happy to hear a program on libraries. We seem to be neglected in so many ways, but humorously, there is a T-shirt out that says, Google can find you 10,000 answers. A librarian will find the correct one.
That's so good. That's so good.
But anyhow, I have served in two capacities. I was most of my career, I was a college librarian. But then my first 2 years, I served as a librarian for the Army.
Fascinating.
Special services.
Wow.
It's where it's a big public relations job. You do a lot of convincing GIs that librarians are great places to be and very useful. So again, I'm very happy that you're talking about libraries today.
Well, and I appreciate the call, and I think that T-shirt sounds terrific.
I want to get 100 of them.
Exactly.
I want one of those.
Exactly.
Well, it's funny. I mean, how many times have you gone out? I mean, not they don't have a librarian sitting at the next table at me. Well, you know, we're out to dinner with friends, but. You know, we reach for our pockets and say, what was the name of that? You know, what's
exactly.
The capital of Argentina? Mm-hmm. We do pull out our smartphones to try
exactly.
to figure these
out. What's interesting about it, so as easy as it is to pull out the smartphone and get a quick answer, you hope it's the right answer, as John
yes.
said before. But we still have a tremendous number of callers or people texting to the library saying, we're in a battle. Okay, you know, can you help us answer this question? And I know our librarians just still love to answer those
That's
sorts
cute.
Of quirky
a good challenge.
Questions.
Like
well,
that.
Absolutely.
You know, even thinking about putting the show together and doing my homework, as I call it, and of course talking to the two of you, I'm thinking about that early childhood library experience.
Right.
So I can remember the smell of the library, the feel of the books, what the shelves looked like, what
yep.
the small little tables looked like. John, what are some of your early library memories?
I had, you know, very similar ones of walking into a public library in my little town and just having the world of knowledge kind of open up in front of me. I also, one of the things I strongly associate with libraries is babysitting, not because I was babysat there, but because I took my first babysitting course there, and that allowed me to make my first paycheck, and I love that.
Yes.
And that's a little like the culinary literacy. It's the babysitting literacy. But one thing I wanted to respond to your caller who raised such a good point. I think, first of all, we should all, those of us who are citizens and not librarians, should be raising the importance of libraries during this crucial time that Siobhan pointed to. But also, just one little anecdote. I was writing a part of this book in the downtown library in Andover, Mass., the Memorial Hall Library, one day after school. And I would sit there at, you know, about 3 o'clock to see some of the kids stream in after school, as they do, and just observing them in the library. And one of them was doing their homework, and they pulled out an iPhone in the middle of the library and said, Siri, what does terminal velocity mean? It turned out Siri didn't have a very good answer for it.
Right.
In fact, didn't know at all. But I was just thinking, there's a librarian like 3 feet away who
exactly.
not only could help you get the answer, but could, you know, teach you how to fish and find it within the library. So I think that there are reminders all around us for why libraries are so important.
What are some of your early library
memories? Oh, actually,
memories?
You know, I tell the story. I'm one of 9 children, so of course the library was my sanctuary because it was my space.
Right.
And I used to run down on Saturday mornings because the children's librarian, though I did not know that at the time, usually performed Cinderella and Snow White. And I thought she was the most gorgeous thing. And then, of course, I would go back as an adult. She's a little tiny little thing. But yeah, no, that was my space and place, and it was I owned it, and I was a, you know, still read voraciously, but as a child I was a voracious reader and bring home stacks of books, and it was just I just loved it, and so
I wanted to, and we're almost a couple minutes before our second break here, then we do have a lot of people that want to get in on the conversation, John, but do you feel like libraries have to think more like businesses or take a look at what coffee shops, what Starbucks is doing and say, let's figure out how to do that within the confines of a library?
It's a great question. I think libraries should not really think too much like businesses. I mean, I really do think that libraries are public goods and public institutions, so I don't think libraries should be out there looking only for business models and so forth, because I think a lot of people in the struggle for funding have been saying libraries should try to find new revenue streams. I think we should support them publicly. But I think the things that are great about businesses or Starbucks or other places is they have figured out how do you bring people in and use Wi-Fi and other things to keep them there. And certainly there could be some lessons there for libraries. But I also think that we should think about you mentioned the fact that there are 120,000 or so libraries in the country. Turns out if you look at the number of public libraries that have Wi-Fi, it's on the order of about 15,000 in the U.S., and the number of McDonald's and Starbucks that have Wi-Fi is about the same. And so you're thinking about how these spaces shape up in our communities. If you've got kids needing to do their homework and needing Wi-Fi for it, I'd much rather they ended up at public libraries than at a McDonald's or a Starbucks.
Almost up on a break here. Siobhan, you want to add to that?
I couldn't agree more, but I think that one of the things that's important about libraries is that we take the rigidity out of the spaces, the hard tables, the hard chairs, and that's where the Starbucks and some of these and the Barnes & Nobles have made an important impact on the design of libraries now, and I think that we need to continue to do that. There is some, it's important the tables and chairs, because a lot of the students are in or people that are coming into, we are their office. But I do think that there's that socialization, that community learning place that can be far more comfortable and far more social and engaging.
Well, let's take that short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about why libraries matter. And you can join us by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Talking with John Palfrey. He's the headmaster at Andover School, author of a new book called Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. And Siobhan Reardon, she's head of the Free Library of Philadelphia. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Siobhan Reardon and John Palfrey about libraries. And again, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Siobhan, let me ask you what I asked you on the off the air during our break here, which is certainly I remember tiptoeing around the library as a kid because you weren't allowed to talk very loud. Mm-hmm. What about now?
So we still need the space where people are quiet because there are people that are in there working. We are the office space for a lot of people now. But as we develop our new library, we are creating these living rooms and common spaces that are noisy, socially engaging, connected learning spaces that are meant to get at the idea that people are learning very differently now, and this social, very connected learning, noisy way of collaborating is an important space for the library to be in. And so a lot of our new spaces are going to have a noisy space. And when you come in, you just have to know that if you want quiet, that's probably not a space you're going to want to be in. So, but we'll be providing, actually, plenty of spaces for the quiet contemplation, reflection-type places.
Thinking about democracy and things like that, although democracy is often very, very noisy.
Democracy is a messy business,
isn't
it?
It is a very messy business. John, looking ahead, so what will be a sign that libraries are reinventing themselves and bringing new life to a community? What will it look like? What will it sound like?
Oh, how nice. I think, it's vibrancy from my perspective. It really is a community-by-community thing. And I think if we said that the library in Philadelphia needs to look exactly like a library in the middle of the country or in some other place, that I think we'd be making a mistake by trying to define something that was generic. I think it needs to be, what exactly are we trying to accomplish for a community, and how do we make libraries central to that to that experience for people. And I think that one of the reasons that Philadelphia has been so successful in this way, and the Philadelphia Library has been so successful, I think is really aligning with the needs in a community and pulling in the William Penn Foundation at a local level and national foundations like the Knight Foundation, which with I'm affiliated at a national level, and trying to say how do we enliven libraries and do so in a way that aligns directly with what the communities need.
It sounds like what you're saying is that you know that a library is successful when people use it, when people are in it.
I think that's exactly right, and are using it in ways that are dynamic and interesting and
right.
clearly
and
connected.
And innovating in the space.
And innovating in the space itself. Mm-hmm. Let me get, looks like Dinah from Broomall to join us. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi there. My name's actually Dina.
Dina.
I do not own a cell phone. I do not own an e-reader, but I do own a library card.
Hooray.
I'm going to give a shout-out to Marple Library. I'm there all the time. I can go on at night, and I just ordered, like, the Winnie the Pooh book. I've just read Lysistrata for the second or third time. And I can't imagine my life without having a library around me. It's just wonderful. When I was in college, I did a couple of summers as work study at 54th and City Line in the Winfield Library, in the Children's Library. Library, and I had so much fun.
A lot of children in that library.
Mm-hmm. Pardon me?
There's a lot of children in that library.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. It was a great library, and the children's librarian back then was a wonderful lady named Jane Avner, who has since moved to California. She was great with the kids. We had so much fun. We had, you know, white kids, black kids, any color kid, rich kids, poor kids. They were there, and they wanted books. And books and books. And we read to them. We did games. We did all kinds of stuff. And I don't buy books anymore unless it's for a gift. I'm at my library, and I support my library whenever I can afford to. And I started reading when I was going to my library, my local library in Prospect Park, when I was like 8 or 9, and you had to be 14 or 15 to get an adult card. Well, I read my way through the kids' library by the time I was 11 or 12, and my mother had to write a note
to get you into the adult section.
Yes, that I had permission to go, quote, read the adult books, and the librarian was so upset. She was a prude.
Well, Dina, I'm going to jump in here only because a lot of other people want to weigh in, but I think our guests appreciate your enthusiasm
completely
for your library experience.
And I guess, thank you for working with us. That's terrific.
How do you clone, I guess, people like Dina? Let me see what Nancy from Gloucester County has to say. Nancy, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Much and thank you so much being willing to feature libraries as an important topic.
Oh, sure.
I've been a librarian for a really long time, worked in the library I am now in a public library for 25 years. And there's a couple of comments I'd like to make, and sure. I would like to hear your guest take on it. First thing I'd like to say is in my profession, when I'm meeting somebody new and I tell them a librarian, I get reactions like, oh, do they still make books?
Oh, dear.
Or, gee, I haven't been in a library since I was 10. And the library, as you've said, are very vibrant, exciting places. And I encourage people, when I meet somebody who comes in and I look around, and they look around, I can see they haven't been in a really long time. And they say, you've got movies. Oh, I can borrow CDs. That's a great experience. But I'd like, if you could, to maybe address what the public does not understand about librarians is the level of training and education that's required. As I've many times had, what do you mean you had to get a master's just to be a librarian? And I know your guests have probably, that's one of those things that makes us bristle, but people have this fundamental misunderstanding about what a complicated organization a library is and how much it takes to run it. And just,
well, you know what, Nancy, if you don't mind, again, we just got a lot of people that want to jump in on the conversation here, but I think you raise a really important point we haven't touched on, which is, I guess, just how people, John, think about librarians, and perhaps it's also how people think about teachers in a way.
So, and nurses.
Nurses, kind of underestimate, because they're all women, I don't know, or largely sort of underestimating the skills required to be a librarian.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're right also to draw the analogy between teachers and librarians, in part because I think librarians are some of the best teachers we have in our communities, whether academic communities or in towns and cities. I agree. I think that the skills involved in librarianship are extremely important. They need to be taught, they need to be learned, and they need to be honed over a period of time. To Siobhan's point earlier, you know, some of the things that people are coming out of information schools and library schools now with are incredibly on point, and some people who are trained some decades ago are actually having to retrain themselves at great cost and great effort. And it's not as simple as just shelving materials and handing them out. It's actually a much more complicated endeavor, and it's something that we ought to value more than we do in our democracy.
Mm-hmm. And why don't we value it enough, Siobhan?
I'm not quite sure, and I do think that the way libraries are funded in as a sort of quality of life versus an essential service, when we've been positioning libraries as an essential service for a very long time. I've been in libraries for 30 years, and I just remember year after year making the pitch to, whether it was New York, the city council, or here in Philadelphia, you know, that it's not the kind of service that you can live without, and Philadelphia demonstrated that in 2008 when the budget was cut so severely.
People went nuts.
So, I mean, that was a voice where for almost 6 months the library was in the front page of the paper. And I think Philadelphia gave great voice to the imperative that a public library exist in a healthy manner. Well, we're building back the health of the organization, which is important. But it's fascinating that people don't understand the skill set that's necessary, the kind of personality you actually need to be able to weather some of the interesting questions that we get.
Well, you're dealing with the public.
So there is a skill set, and you know it takes 2 years to get your graduate degree in library science, because you're dealing with both the digital aspects of building websites and understanding the depth and breadth of information as it's coming at you, and then all of the traditional codices that we have available to us. And so it's actually fairly complicated. And just as I said, in library school, to the caller's point, we're actually not taught administration, by the way. You're actually taught administration when you're on the job. So you get hired out of library school with the basic information on information and information building and information and the analytics behind that. But your actual management of the library is the training you get when you're on site. And that's fairly interesting.
Yeah, indeed it is.
And some are ready for it and some are not.
John, did you want to add something to that?
No, I think Siobhan said it very well.
Okay. Both of you mentioned the libraries as an important place where books and things are collected. But I wonder, John, especially in this quote-unquote information age that we're in, is there a limit to what – I'm thinking of the Library of Congress. I remember when I was in college down there, just overwhelmed by the amount of books and materials inside that building. I mean, can libraries really be in the collection business?
Sure, libraries are absolutely in the collection business, but I think libraries are no longer in the exhaustive collection business, in the sense that I don't think any library can claim to be complete in the sense of having all the information, you know, in the vernacular from everywhere in the world. That's even true, you know, on a particular topic. That's true. So I was director of the Harvard Law School Library when I used to be a law professor there, and I think, you know, decades ago they could claim that we collected all the law in the vernacular from all over the world. It's just no longer possible today. So I think the answer there is that libraries just have to collaborate with one another. One of the efforts that you mentioned earlier that I've been a part of, and Philadelphia is an important part of this too, is to create something called the Digital Public Library of America, which is to say, as we digitize material, to find a way for people to share the information that they're digitizing with people in other parts of the country. So it's not like every little community has to digitize its information and keep it separate, or digitize the same information over and over again. Even the Library of Congress couldn't do this on its own, but as a network, if we think about how the Internet's been built, or something like Wikipedia has been built, there's real power in a collaborative and distributed approach to sharing and creating information.
Siobhan, do libraries want to do that, or maybe they have to do that?
I think we have to do it, and I know that, you know, if you break down my staff, there are those that really can't wait to get involved in the DPLA, the Digital Public Library of America, and any of the other open source systems, and there are those that just choose not to. That's their traditional in their work, but it's what's important about it is it's about less about building collections, but it's all about the curating of the information. And I think that you and I talked about this before we started, and I think that when we have a marketing campaign about our librarians being curators of content, and I think that that's when you begin this work of the DPLA and Europeana over in Europe, these are amazingly gorgeously curated collections, and we like to do that, and I think that that's the beauty of being able to lift so much information so that the world can see it, I think, is what becomes monumental about our work.
Let me get Christine from Collingswood to join us on Radio Times. Christine, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I live in Collingswood, and the library here is, I guess, small physically, but it's really found a way to be focal in the community. I go there mostly to rent or borrow DVDs and the occasional book, but they have things such as museum memberships that you can rent and or borrow again. I keep using the word. Also, with people in from the holidays, I work from home and have been going to the library for a quiet place to work during the day, and have been really pleasantly surprised to see how many people are there during the day working. And I think a lot of people, if they visited even their small town library, would be very pleased to see just all the different things that their library can offer them.
That's great. Christine, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me read a comment from Kim. This is to you, John. He said, Kim says, I heard John Palfrey mention that those who are well off and have access to electronic materials and can search the internet may not need libraries. I respectfully disagree. I work in an academic library as an assistant. I see students who are from well-to-do and do not know how to search for or access resources that will actually further their knowledge. And I doubt you disagree with Kim, because it's complicated to search for knowledge. Go ahead.
I totally agree, and if I implied that well-to-do people don't need libraries at all, I completely did not mean to say that. Only to say that in relative terms, I think there's greater sort of greater basic need in other communities. But there's no question. I teach at a boarding school which has a very broad range of kids, from kids who are on full financial aid to kids who are extremely well off. And absolutely, I think we make a mistake if we think that young people know how to search for information or to sort information just because they come from a well-off background. I think, in fact, very often the best-off kids are ones who need the most training in this respect. So there's no question but that everybody needs a library. I was responding in that context only to the idea of providing particular services in particular communities where the need may be greatest.
Siobhan, you wanted to add something?
John brings up a really interesting point, as does your caller. I think one of the important losses in particularly, I can't imagine, it's not in every urban center, that where the public schools or any of the schools have closed their libraries. And so what you're dealing with is now a second generation of students coming out that do not know how to get at, analyze, and work with information as it's coming down. So it's almost information literacy that is no longer taught in the schools because of the loss of the school media specialists in the schools. So the libraries, the public libraries, have been the de facto school media specialist. It's not a good role for us because we just are not tied to the curriculum. The support that is no longer there when it comes to information learning and information analytics, it's just not there anymore. And so John, of course, is seeing it, and a lot of our colleges and universities are now seeing it too.
We're nearly out of time. Go ahead, John.
So just one tiny thing is just the importance of those 100,000 or so school libraries that are out there. It's a very, very high correlation between schools that have a great school library and school performance.
That's
and I think
right.
That underscores the point of your caller as well.
That's right.
Siobhan, do you have a favorite time at the Free Library of Philadelphia?
I have a favorite time at the
time of day when you're in that?
You know, I love it at the end of the day, and we've closed the doors, and I get to walk around and just say what happened in this building today. I do love this, and I do a lot of management by walking about, it's more toward the end of the day as I'm seeing people just sort of leave with their bundles of books and just having come out of an author talk, and it's really pretty good. It's really pretty good.
Well, my thanks to both of you. Siobhan Reardon, thank you for joining
Pleasure.
Us today
thank
on
you,
Radio Martin. Times. Mm-hmm. And she heads up the Free Library of Philadelphia. John Palfrey, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for holding up libraries.
Oh, absolutely. The book is called Bibliotech, Why Libraries Matter More Than Ever in the Age of Google. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about the program. Well, now we have to say goodbye and thank you to our wonderful intern, Diane Allen, who's been a joy to work with, smart, curious, resourceful. She worked behind the scenes with us. She got a story on Newsworks. Best of luck, Diana, and thank you for all your help. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, John Ahrens, and Liz Fiedler. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.